Meeting started here. Myself, present, Chris, Matt, Ken, Stan. So we got citizen comment, no one's here, no one's online. Minutes for correction or approval?
I'm good.
Good.
Alright. So we got new business, ADM 2026-08, budget report for January 2026.
Okay, so the $535,000 in the January 26th column represents consumer sales in the month of October. It actually was, I think I alluded to this in last month's meeting, it's actually 5% lower than the year prior, which is the first time that has happened in a long time. However, when I look at the data, the October 2024 and the November 2024 months are lower than normal and then higher than normal. So what we think happened, and I did not go back and verify it, most likely one of the bigger box stores probably double booked a month of revenue, like paid it late, had an accounting issue or something, which has happened before, and then artificially inflated that November number relative to the October number. So the $535,000 is actually exceeded expectations based on my own internal modeling, and is kind of in line with what we've been seeing as, you know, some pretty major increases year over year, going back several months now. The column that is off chart that will show up next month is the November 2025 consumer sales, which we just got information on today in detail and in summary a week and a half ago. That number for November 2025 consumer sales was $598,000, which is the largest month we've ever had by far, and is represents basically the first 2 weeks of Costco opening. So we are diving into the details to see how much of that was Costco relative to the other big boxes to try to figure out transfer sales. But our earliest gut check estimate on the Costco numbers was that they were slightly better than maybe we had budgeted and expected. And that will, be apparent when we do our budget presentation here in a few weeks, probably the March 10th meeting. So everything else was generally in line with what I expected, and I will take any questions that anybody has.
Okay.
I'm good.
No?
I'm good.
All right. We're about to item number two, ADM 2026-09, Treasurer's Report for January 2026.
Clear. Beginning fund balance of $70,261,803. Year-to-date revenues of $47,057,247. Year-to-date expenses of $78,307,895 for a projected ending fund balance of $39,011,155.
Thank you. Anyone have any questions on this?
Nope.
Good. You good, Matt?
All good.
All right. Let's put that on consent agenda. ADM 2026-10, review of invoice between $5,000 and $25,000 for January and February.
Informational as always, just recapping bills of between $5,000 and $25,000 for the last meeting on the 10th, and then the meeting before that on January 27th. Any questions? Happy to answer them.
Everyone good on that?
Yep.
Item number four, ADM 2026-11, website report for January 2026.
January is our lowest engagement month historically, and it follows on trend. the detailed report is in your packet. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Right. Hearing none, we'll move on to the next item. ADM 2026-12, project cost summary report update, Lake Michigan water sourcing project in Public Works and Parks Department facility.
Yeah, the report is in your packet. I believe the public works side, the change orders and authorizations that you saw in the last city council meeting, I think should be reflected in here. So we're still tracking well below, you know, even our own internal estimates for construction contingency, owner's contingency, and risk reserve. So that's good. Risk reserves was the tariffs, as a reminder. And on the DuPage Water Commission side, again, the numbers shown in there reflect only the higher cost estimates that we communicated after the first bid package came in a few months ago over expectations. So in the next month or so, probably not for the March admin committee meeting, but maybe for April, I would anticipate that we'll have some analysis and updates related to how the final bid packages have come in, and then maybe you know, reducing some of these cost estimates that are listed in the Lake Michigan report. So if anybody has any questions, happy to take them.
Just one thing, Mark. So with the public works facility, now that it's kind of moving toward a conclusion, is there anything else that we might be getting a surprise at or not?
Hey, they keep saying no. So I think the largest thing that's come up in the past couple weeks, you know, that we've authorized is like a $20,000 wall in the mezzanine above the garage, just to provide another point of access to a storage room where we're going to put our documents. And that was just, we've got two staircases on each side of the mezzanine, one of which had access to the room, the other which didn't. And when you see the plans, it's kind of like, you know, close to the other stairway. So we thought it'd be beneficial to add that in there. But, you know, that was a design choice that we looked at and was like, this doesn't really make sense not to do it. And everything else has been pretty much in line. So, you know, a couple of the choices we've made with doing overwinter work, you know, resulted in additional concrete costs, and then we had to heat the building. And we talked through that, I think, at a prior city council meeting. And that was just to, you know, make sure that we're on schedule. So, you know, there really hasn't been anything that's been brought to my attention that's been like a major miss that has caused heartburn. It's all just little things here and there, and well within, I guess, industry estimates for, you know, the amount of change orders coming in on a project of this size. So, you know, Pete always says that, you know, sometimes the, like the finishing carpentry and everything can be a little bit hectic just with, you know, moving outlets and switches and all these other things that maybe you just don't think through on a set of plans until you get in there and see it. But those are usually relatively low dollar values. So I continue to, you know, be pretty optimistic here that we're going to meet our targets. And then so.
That's great. Thank you.
Do we have any costs for moving?
You know, I think it was estimated as part of one of the early budget estimates. I think in the city hall, that move, I want to say it was like $10,000 or $15,000, if I remember correctly. But I don't remember what we budgeted for at Public Works. So okay. I'll take a look at that.
Yeah. No, if we don't, that's all right. I mean, we've got $2.1 million sitting in contingency still. Not that I want to spend it, but if there's a couple grand that we need to put to it, makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did put in $100,000 in the 26 budget
okay.
to occur in FY27 for owner moving expenses.
Okay.
So
you got a good chunk in there. That's
$100,000.
Yeah.
Okay. What are you anticipating as you know, single piece on a truck?
I just did what Eric told me to do. We have to talk to Eric about that.
We'll have to talk to Bart and Eric about that.
Double white glove service, I'm sure. Yeah.
Okay. It's covered. Yeah.
Matt, did you have anything for that one?
Nope, all good.
All right. So, item number six, ADM 2026-13, travel authorization for fiscal year 2027.
So in your packet, you have detailed cost descriptions for elected travel for FY27 for IML, the spring drive down, and then we also put in FY28 ICSC for the mayor, even though we say it's FY27, we book the travel in FY27, but the actual trip is in FY28. So all that information is detailed out for you. within the packet. We always are on the conservative side and we put everybody in there, but we usually scale back by the end of the year.
Rob, what's been the typical for IML total? Do you have a...
like total cost?
Yeah, on average, you know.
If I had to take a guess.
We have to pull it and go back and see what we're doing.
5 to 10,000 maybe.
Yeah, we usually send between 3 and 5 elected officials there. So
maybe a third of what we're
doing. It's like a quarter of what we budget.
Okay.
So.
All right. So that obviously
might be less than that, yeah.
Okay. Good to know.
Any other thoughts on this? You guys care to put this on consent?
That's fine.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Item number 7, ADM 2026-14, resolution accepting a proposal from EMAE.
So this would be an audit of our utility billing system, really with the focus on trying to help us with our non-revenue water loss, getting that below 10%. Obviously, the physical driver behind that is actual physical leaks, but, you know, there can be other material issues that can impact that, billing inaccuracies, data errors, and things like that. So this audit is going to analyze our data, you know, making sure that we're billing people correctly, and also on the refuse side as well. You know, as I put in the memo, there's some bullet points, things it's going to address. Mismatch between meters, incorrect customer classifications, you know, improper handling of leak adjustments, closed accounts, and things like that. So hopefully this will help us, you know, get under that 10% threshold that we need to be in order to tap on to Lake Michigan in a couple years here.
So this is all financial. Nothing on the physical side. That's what Eric is doing on his side of it. So this will just be financial audit to make sure that policies, practices, all that is in place. Do you think that, you know, the cost of $60,000, we're recapturing that over time terms of savings?
I definitely think so. I mean, this is probably the first real deep dive we've ever done into the utility billing data. So I think there are some, you know, some gains and some, you know, some positive things that come out of that. And I think it's probably time, and now's a good time to do it too, just to get our data as clean and straightforward as possible as we transition from MSI into a new, you know, ERP software, which I know has been on the, you know, the docket here for a couple of years. But you know, I think now's a good time to do this.
Okay. And they'll provide recommendations, just like our financial audits of the year, to, you know, how to correct things, anything that we could do to improve, I would assume.
Absolutely.
Okay. And then you'll put those in place to make the system better.
Absolutely.
Just as a point of reference, there is a non-disclosure agreement as part of this agreement. Primarily, it's to protect the city's data that we're sending to the consultant, so it clarifies that the consultant won't distribute confidential data. As drafted and likely to be in the city council packet, it is a two-way NDA, and with all the questions about NDAs recently, we just wanted to make sure that everybody understood that. We will be likely modifying the proposed NDA so that there's no, you know, process for us to follow. If somebody FOIAs their agreement, it will simply protect the city's data as it gets sent externally.
How long will this process be to comb through the data?
It took us about 4 months from start to finish.
4 months?
Yeah.
Cool. Any other questions? Let's put that on the regular agenda.
Okay.
Item number 8, ADM 2026-15, master agreement for Soundscape.
Okay, so this is a simple agreement that kind of governs when we do small tasks with Soundscape, which is our sound engineer on the data center projects. You know, what the terms are and what the hourly rates will be. So this doesn't necessarily authorize us to spend any money. There's no, you know, minimum spend attached to it. It's just if the city council approves it or if the staff approves it and it's less than $25,000, these are the terms and conditions that that work will operate under for now. So I had asked Christy to do this after we authorized about a $5,000 study of the cumulative impact of noise on data centers in the past few weeks. and looked at it and said it would just be helpful to have this known by everybody and authorized so that there's not a question as to hourly rates in terms of the conditions, you know, if we continue to spend money with the engineers to do that. So with that, happy to take any questions.
This is all recoverable fees, correct? Any, if anything is expended under this, it's recoverable through reimbursement through developers, correct?
Most likely. You know, I will say if any other noise issues come up when we use them, that, you know, we may have to eat it.
Okay.
For instance, there were a couple citizen comments in the last few meetings about some noise coming from the Wrigley factory. So we are following up on that with a normal property maintenance complaint. We've not authorized them to do any work on that, but I could see us calling them and saying, hey, we've got a real world, you know, chiller complaint or something here. You know, how do we monitor this? Like, what's the best way to work with them, et cetera? So,
okay. So
I'd be good to know those levels.
So this is not just data center, but this could play to others where we, instead of us taking a sound meter out that needs to be calibrated, we could have a consultant come in. Okay. So that's just authorizing it.
Yeah.
Blanket.
Or we would do it ourselves and just ask them, like, how do we do it? Is this the appropriate way to measure the sound? You know, do we need a different sound meter? Like, you know, are we reading the data correctly? So they're just a point of reference for us and have been, you know, I think a good resource.
And so this is authorizing it. It can exceed $25,000, but this is case-by-case basis.
Did Wrigley and Roark Textiles, did they have similar sound ordinance thing limits like or not?
Yeah, I mean, they are, you know, covered by the sound ordinance the same way the data centers will be. So the only difference is, you know, with Wrigley and with Roark Textiles, you know, we don't necessarily know how many generators they have per se. You know, we don't have that like in the city plan somewhere. We don't know what equipment they have. So, you know, it's a bit unknown. And, yeah, so that's where it's at.
Matt, you got any thoughts on this?
I don't have a question on this, I guess, specifically, but I think, Bart, there was some information about sound stacking. Is that related to this, and is that being looked at right now?
Yeah, that's the cumulative noise study. So they're going to look at, I think Meyer was included, but it was definitely Cardinal Steel and Cyrus One, just to, you know, get an idea of, you know, what different properties in the region would experience, you know, different scenarios when they're all operating simultaneously.
Got it. So one of the things that I kind of be interested to know is when they're doing the sound studies in the future, do we know what tier of diesel generators they were considering? Because I think tier 2 and 3 are significantly louder than tier 4.
Yes. So that is an ongoing source of negotiation. My understanding, though, of the recently passed but maybe not signed state law that governs this is that all future generators for data centers will be required to be tier 4.
Signed on the 8th, it goes into effect on the 1st of June.
There you go. So, yes, so that is an active requirement. And we're planning on mandating that. I think all the data centers have volunteered that that's what they're planning to do anyway.
Correct.
So, in that line, you know, whenever I do another update, potentially next week, a couple of the sound studies that were mentioned at the citizen meeting about the health impacts and stuff get into a little bit of, you know, the different emissions levels for those tier 2, 3, and 4 generators. So hopefully I'll have a little bit of info for everybody to read.
Okay. I just realized we're in February. So January 8th, it was signed. June 1st, it goes into,
Great.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
You guys good at putting this on the regular agenda?
How much is it?
Yeah, I think it's still fair to have on the regular agenda just because sound comes up so much in comments.
Yeah, I kind of would favor that too, I think, instead of on consent.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we can kind of reiterate what Bart and I just kind of talked about. Maybe we'll have some additional clarity when that rolls around, right? So.
And so yesterday at Public Works for a Cyrus One funded project, they wanted to put on the regular agenda just so we could
say that they're paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
So just brushing by it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just
get part of
it. All right, so our last item is item number 9, ADM 2026-16, resolution approving a sexual abuse and misconduct prevention policy.
So this kind of stemmed from our liability insurance renewal this past November. Gleifelter just kind of, I guess from my perspective, kind of out of nowhere, said that we need a sexual abuse and misconduct policy. So I said, okay. The reason being is that we have, recreation as a part of the city. So because of their programming and interaction with minors, the insurance company just wants a policy like this in place. So, I went ahead and drafted one, and I had Alliant, who's our broker, kick it up to Gleifelter just to make sure it was acceptable to them. They said it was, and then I had our labor attorney look at it as well, and it was acceptable to her. So this is the policy, just real quick. It talks about just the basic definitions and examples, reporting procedure, our investigation process, and then we'll have the employer, the volunteer, sign off on this. So this would be incorporated into our onboarding process. And then Exhibit B, you can see just some of the best practices kind of itemized here by Gleifelter. Most of this, if not all of it, has been incorporated into our policy. And then there's some education and some continuing learning examples that Gleifelter offers, because this is something that we want to continually bring up from time to time, just to make sure everybody's aware of it and complying with the policy accordingly.
So in keeping with the other types of training that we have to do for the city, whether it be the harassment or the open meetings acts, the different elements that are requirements, does this have a component of harassment training that would be required for all staff or staff that are dealing with minors, anything of the sort, would we look to implement?
Well, I imagine it would be part of all staff training. Maybe those who interact with minors on a more consistent basis might, go more in depth with it. I think for general staff, it might be kind of included with maybe like a sexual harassment type of training or something like that. But certainly if you're interacting with children or minors on a consistent basis, then you might do a deeper dive than someone like me would because I don't interact with minors at all. So
right. I think it'd be good to be able to check the box and say, yes, whether it's like a 20-minute video that you have to walk through, do a questionnaire at the end of, I think it would be beneficial to be able to, like I said, check that box insurance-wise and just, policy-wise.
Sure.
Do that.
So this is kind of employee entered. What about, we use parks, because I thought at one time when I was on park board, we did have some type of policy for like people that coach. And they're not really, huh?
Yeah, we do have that. It was, I would say, less of a perfect fit for what the insurance company was looking for than what this is. So there's been some changes in reporting and definitions that they asked us to update. So, and the previous employee manual did have a section that covered reporting and sexual harassment. It just wasn't as neatly defined as this one is.
And that's the part of what I'm talking about. We bring on a lot of temporary, coaches, whatnot. Are they being trained appropriately? Do we have that?
I do know we fingerprint them now. So I think you
can't coach. Yeah, you're getting a background check, but are they going through the process of, anti-harassment type of...
Yeah, I don't know.
Protocol? I mean, it's nice to get a little agreement that says, as a staff member, you're not going to do this, this, or this, and here's how you can report it if it comes in, but I think training is very important to show that we're taking that step.
We do a similar training to what you guys have to go through as elected officials. It's kind of general. It's not necessarily, about the reporting and the definitions that we have here exactly. It's broader. And I do believe that Tim does some more targeting training, but I'll follow up with him and ask him. So.
Yeah, if that could come back, I'd appreciate that to understand what we're doing for groups. Parks and Rec is the big one, but obviously across the city as a whole. But
years ago, not that long ago, you get parents that are just crazy. And I remember there was times where Tim had to bar them because they got into arguments and fights in their kids' basketball game. So I know there has been instances. I don't think we've ever had litigation about it, but and I don't know if even the training
sorts that out. It wouldn't be a knucklehead.
No, but as long as your coaches and, you know, staff that are part of the city, if you're signing on to an agreement that says you're going to coach, you're going to get paid by the city to do something with the city, you should be able to understand what, you know, as it says, you know, sexual abuse, conduct, reporting, protection, you should understand those.
Oh, I agree 100%.
You need to intervene or, you know, report it. You know, they need to have that understanding. So,
yeah.
You know, granted, I'm sure we hand them a piece of paper that says, here's your policy. You're agreeing to it.
Yeah, that's part of the registration problem.
Exactly. Yeah. Take it to the next step, maybe. That's good.
Matt, did you have anything to add?
Nope, all good.
All right, well, is there any old business?
You want that on?
Oh, right, that's a good one. Let's put that on consent. Jump the gun.
It's okay.
I don't believe we have any old business. Any additional business?
I'm good.
Hearing none, I think we can adjourn.
Thanks, guys.
Mm-hmm.